This year's donations might go to, say, the geology department.
Oh dear, not the dirt people.
Geology is the study of pressure and time. That's all it takes, really.
What kind of activity is turning acid?
Look, I'm just a geologist. I like rocks. I love rocks.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the Geology Flannel Cast. My name is Steve.
Hey, everyone. I am Chris.
And I am Jesse.
You flubbed that one there. You want a mulligan?
that would make me Jesse.
Because in my head, I was going to say good evening, but I get yelled at every time. This is a hostile work environment.
Listen, all of us right now, as far as anybody knows, we're in rooms with no windows. Yeah. You know, we could be podcasting from the future after the nuclear holocaust.
We have no sense of day or time, or podcast overlords just force us to record these.
Yeah, it's the like mystery science
overlords.
It's like Mystery Science Theater 3000.
You're going to talk about James Hutton today, whether you like it or not.
If I see Jesse blinking SOS in Morse code, we'll know something went horribly wrong.
Yeah. I just learned the other day on social media, there's like hand signals for like if you're in distress.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have no
idea.
Isn't
it just waving?
No, it's like subtle stuff. Like you're being beaten at home. It's like, I don't know, you're supposed to – I should really look into this before I start saying stuff. But
oh, you're like taking this for a turn, aren't you?
I am.
I wish I knew that. I feel like it should be more universal because someone could be doing that and I would have I'd be like, you got an itch? What's going on over there?
Oh, man. Seminex trying to tell us something.
Yeah. Been trying to tell you this for years.
Why do you think I keep coming back to cry for help? Anyway, we shouldn't mock that. But so you want to pay some bills real quick?
Sure.
So the formatting formula, I actually reached out to the formatting formula today to ask just some basic knowledge on writing long document questions about appendices. And if you use an appendices more than once in the body of the document, do you rename the appendices or is it still appendix one, for example?
What was the answer?
So I used appendix one in the beginning and then I used it way at the end. It's still supposed to say appendix one. So even though you're like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, if you re-reference appendix one, you just put it as one and then 11, 12, 13, 14. So that was the answer. So, and they also taught me that you can bookmark these appendices. You can hyperlink these appendices. You can just click on it. It'll shoot right to the appendices in the document. And then you hit another button. It goes right back to where you're reading. Like, how awesome would that be? Like, talking about referencing a figure, you just click on it. It goes to the figure. And then you click back and it goes back. All these amazing things that they can do with Word. And the fact that I really don't need to know all that stuff because I can just send it to the formatting formula and they can fix it for me. But if I was, you know, slightly more ambitious, I could actually go to their YouTube page at youtube.com/C/formatting formula. And I could learn how to do all this stuff myself. They, you know, they have all these videos that teach you how to do all this stuff. Hundreds of hours of videos out there. So subscribe to them, like them, watch them. And most important of all, let them know that the Geology Flannel Cast sent you.
Really is the big thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we want you to patronize them, but or not patronize, be a patron of them. Yeah. We don't want you to talk down to them.
You're doing a great
one of these days,
job.
Steve will learn how to talk.
Thanks for that.
Yeah,
video.
You could, you know. It did nothing for me. Anyway. Formatting formula, please check them out. There. And we're going to need new sponsors soon if I keep screwing up these commercials.
Appendices and linking things like that. It just drives me crazy.
Like legit, just asked them a few hours ago. So, and they got right back to me. It was super fast, super professional. You can't say enough about them.
How are they doing? They doing all right?
Yeah.
I've got a big document I'm putting together in the spring, and I need to work on like fields, like having fields that auto update and stuff. I'm just getting my email. It's got an email in the draft waiting to go. Formatting formula.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love it.
I don't need it quite.
So yet. Please check them out. So you can never start too early. That's my always saying. I don't know. I got nothing.
All right, that commercial really fizzled at the end. That was
anyway. What do we got going on tonight, gentlemen?
Well, start off with some news stories. Yeah, we got a main topic today.
Yeah,
preparation. We prepared for this. By we, I mean me and these two guys. Kind of just I don't know.
How dare you?
I kid because I love. What's going on in the news today, Jesse?
Oh, man. I'm glad you asked. So I got one interesting story I read about. I actually heard about, and then I was so intrigued, I read up on it. do you know about low background steel?
Low background steel.
Yeah. I'm familiar.
No, I don't. Is this like the steel, like somebody's taking something from you?
No, like the metal.
Okay. No, I don't know about either of them.
Yeah. Low background steel. That's a pickpocket.
Yeah.
So basically all steel that's produced today and tomorrow and yesterday and every day since July 16th, 1945. Does that date ring a bell? All steel produced since then is radioactive.
Dun, dun, dun. Is that the day, not July 16th? So that was that when they tested?
Yeah, it's Trinity.
Trinity, okay. That's
the first one. Yep, so so since what? That test and the...
Yeah, how's this work?
How does an atom bomb work? Well, that's...
No, not the atom bomb. How does it get into the steel?
Oh, great. I'm glad you asked. You're really setting me up today. So
it's going to be a good one today.
Basically, the steel making process, so steel is an alloy, right? And you take iron ore and you're mixing it with carbon. And the way you refine it and the way you do that is you cook the... In some cases, what's called coke, which is, you know, just basically cooked coal, anthracite coal or high grade coal. And so there's your carbon, and then you take your iron ore and you're cooking it. And there's a lot of impurities in it, and you want to get the impurities out. And so one of the ways you do it is the Bessemer process. And so the Bessemer process is basically you're injecting oxygen into it, and it drives off a lot of the impurities. Well, where does this oxygen come from? The atmosphere.
The sky.
The sky. So since our atomic testing and, you know, the subsequent, the two bombs that were dropped at the end of the war and the 500 plus atomic tests since then, there's a lot of radioactive fallout, you know, really, really tiny amounts of it that just linger in the atmosphere. Cobalt 60 and tritium and the others.
The others.
Etc. And so basically when you're injecting this oxygen into the steel making process, you're injecting some of that radiation. And so this becomes a problem when you need like really sensitive instruments. So if you're making a Geiger counter, you don't really don't want steel that has radiation.
Oh, how about that?
Or high grade medical equipment that is used in say radiation therapy or things like that, because you want to be precise with how much radiation you're giving patients. Space probes, Voyager has low background steel they needed, because you want to, if you're trying to measure, say, radiation in space and things like that, you don't want to have any background. So carbon-14, thanks, Frank. Patreon Frank,
but hooking me up here. Didn't Voyager have its own nuclear power source?
I believe so.
But look, let's not get into the weeds here.
Sorry. So is this like a new finding, or is this
this has been known about.
Okay, I was going to say.
So if you want to make something that is steel that has none of this radiation in it, there's a few processes that can do it with new ore, but they're super expensive and super energy intensive. Mm-hmm. The best way we do it is we as humans, not me personally in my basement.
Not yet.
Yeah. I want to see what's on the other side of the camera. All right, come on.
It's just a forge. It's just something.
I thought you were sweating a lot over there. I don't know.
Have you ever seen the guys that stick their hands under the molten steel because you have the Leidenfrost effect?
What's this?
So the Leidenfrost effect is where the water basically in your molecules creates just a little barrier, so you can do it really quickly before it vaporizes all that water and burns you. Mm-hmm. So like you can Google it.
They can actually put their hand through like the molten material.
They just slap it like quickly. Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay,
yeah.
So who was a genius that first discovered this? Well, you touch it. I'm not touching it. You touch it.
If you can do it without molten iron, if you have a pan and you get it really hot,
yeah,
stove, and you drop water on it, the water will ball up really quickly,
mm-hmm, before
it vaporizes. That's the Leidenfrost effect. It sort of contracts, and it's actually on a little vapor barrier there before it evaporates.
Yeah, have you ever seen it with the little like Gobi beads, or I think they're called? They're essentially like really thin membranes around water droplets. You know, they're for decoration or toys or something. But if you drop those in a frying pan, they never stop moving. They just keep, because that effect just keeps happening over and over and over and over.
That's kind of crazy.
Because it never really evaporates because it's encased. So it's almost like a solid acting like a liquid because it's a solid for something.
Solid acting like a liquid because it's solid.
With that effect, yeah. Yes.
I'm almost, Leidenfrost. I'm worried that we're going to get emails.
Yeah.
Leidenfrost effect. So anyway, where we get what's called low background steel is basically recycling. Steel that was produced prior to 1945. Uh-huh. And the main source of it is off the coast of Scotland. So this is going to tie in with James Hutton later.
Oh, should have saved this one for last.
I know. Shoot. It would have been a great segue.
All right. So just keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah. I didn't even think about it until right now. That's how, maybe I won't even do my second story. We'll just use this as a segue. The second story is not even great. So anyhow, at the end of World War I, the German fleet sailed up to, like off the coast of Scotland, the Shetland Islands, there's a big naval port there called Scapa Flow. And they were supposed to turn over all of their big like dreadnoughts and their battleships at the end of the war. And they got up there and they scuttled them all. Instead of turning them over and giving them to the British, they sunk them. And so there's all of these sunken, you know, World War I era battleships just on the bottom of the seabed there. And so that's our main source of low background steel right now.
Very cool. Way.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but you can trace, some of this is sort of interesting. You can trace, like, they pulled up a pre-World War II battleship. I forget the name of the battleship. But it's the main thing in like an MRI machine in like a hospital somewhere. Like, so you can actually follow.
Wow, that's really wild.
Where this material goes and where it came from. Yeah. Good time. So low background steel. I thought that was really interesting when I read about it.
Yeah, I'd never heard of this until just now. So I know, you think, oh, come on, what do you care if there's a little bit of background radiation, like, you know, whatever. Your granite countertop probably has a little bit of background radiation coming off of it, you know?
Yeah, the millirems coming off are like...
It's like nothing.
Nothing. Like, I mean, you can actually... Do you know you can go to the Trinium site, the Trinity site? They one day a year, they allow people in to go where the first atom bomb was dropped.
It sounds like a great idea.
But apparently, like, yeah, apparently you get more radiation.
Like from the flight there, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely from the flight. Just from eating food throughout your year.
Bananas.
Like, have a few bananas. Yeah, you get like 40 millirem or whatever.
Wasn't there, this is totally like an urban legend. I don't know if you guys ever heard of this. I don't even know if this story's true or not, but supposedly there was like a shipment of bananas that was coming into the U.S. or something, and it set off Geiger counters. Or ever hear of like a story like this?
I heard one about magazines.
Yeah, I heard one about magazines.
The glossy coating was, they were using
Kaolinite. Which has potassium in it, right?
I guess it's got potassium.
Yeah.
And then there was something about kitty litter. Did you guys ever hear about that? Kitty litter being slightly radioactive? Or I don't know. I could be completely wrong. But
that I haven't heard of.
Your cat's glowing at night when it's going to the bathroom.
That's half the fun right there. Anyways, yeah, remember the one of our old professors had the Fiesta wear that was hot.
Yeah. Yep. That's still in his office.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank God I'm out of that place.
What? Was it radon? Why was it hot?
It had radioactive.
The clay. Paint. The paint. Okay.
I thought it was the paint. I could be wrong. I thought it was the glazing, like the stuff, like the material that made it super bright colors is what made it radioactive. Like it was like cobalt something.
The brilliant red was from a radioactive glaze.
Oh.
Detectable amounts of uranium oxide.
Uranium oxide, that's what it was. There was a Doogie Howser episode about that.
All right, bam. Dude, listen, you're really dating yourself now.
I was just about to say, we're not going to date ourselves here.
Neil Patrick Harris was like 15 when he made that.
But Neil Patrick Harris, being the good doctor he was when he was 15, there was a family that only used to use the Fiesta wear once a year for like Christmas. And then when the grandma died, this woman decided to start using it all the time. She figured like, it's so fancy, why not use it all the time? And then the whole family got sick and they couldn't figure out why. And now it was radiation poisoning from the Fiesta wear.
Man, he was house before house.
That's what I was just about to say. Yeah. I didn't put two and two together until just now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a great story that I don't know off the top of my head. So a Patreon David just posted, there was a John Wayne movie called The Conqueror, which was about Genghis Khan, but it was filmed downwind of a nuclear testing site. And there's like... It like a bunch of people got sick on it. I feel like a few people actually may have developed like cancer and died from it.
Oh, geez.
Like all this radioactive dust was blowing in, and there. Yeah, that's like a legendary story. And
I never heard of that one,
which is terrible too, because I've never heard of that movie. So it wasn't even that good of a movie.
Yeah, 92 people.
Oh, geez.
Wow.
Jeez. Yeah, I just heard about that for the first time, like sort of recently.
Was the Duke okay? I guess he was. That was towards the end of his life when he did that about Genghis Khan.
I think he died of throat cancer, but he smoked 87 cigarettes an hour.
He was not a healthy individual.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway. Yeah. Oh, wow. Some form of cancer. I'm just reading about it now.
Yeah, I mean, some of those statistics might be a little bit skewed because, let's face it, between the three of us, one of us is going to get cancer.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean we're all...
Man, Steve, you are really just hitting the high notes on this episode today.
Like I said...
Any other topics you'd like to bring up, you know?
I would like to point out that none of us have windows in our so-called non-bunkers.
So. I mean, I got a window around the corner.
I got a tiny...
Yeah, you know, sure, and I have a window somewhere too. We're all keeping up the facade.
The Duke smokes six packs a day.
What?
Cow. That's like every other
God
breath.
God bless. Good for him.
Lung and stomach cancer.
How many cigarettes are in a pack? Like, is it 20?
20. Holy moly.
120 packs. 120 cigarettes a day.
A lot of smokes. How much does it take to smoke a cigarette?
That's a good question. I don't know.
It's like five, say
two, like 3 minutes maybe.
Yeah,
it's got to just be one after the other until,
I mean, if he's like, when he woke up
until he went to sleep.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
that's like, I mean, I'm not angry. I'm sad he died, but I'm impressed. That's,
yeah. I don't think he can afford that today.
No.
No, what do cigarettes cost now? Like, they're like,
that would be like 60 bucks a day.
Yeah.
No, they're like 10 bucks now.
10 bucks?
Well, maybe down south they're like free, but up here.
That's if it's 3 minutes a cigarette, that's 6 hours of smoking a day. An insane amount of smoking.
Like I said,
six hours.
Probably from the time we woke up until the time we went to bed.
He must have been like, I feel like he was probably just walking around like Pigpen with secondhand smoke.
So that means to say if he was awake for, say, 12 hours, well, he's probably awake for more than that, but just that would be 50% of the day if he was awake for 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you figure he'd probably be awake for 16 or so.
Yeah, that's probably just minus meals.
Yeah, right? Just, wow. All right.
Yeah.
Good for John Wayne.
Yeah.
The Duke.
God rest his soul.
Keep on ripping.
Do you want to, Jesse, you want to go with the second story real fast, or?
Yeah, I'll just do it real quick.
Go ahead. Go for it.
There was a near Earth, sorry, I'm taking us in space again. I know you're tired of space.
Yeah, I had a space one too, but there was a near Earth
object. They thought it was a meteor and they were watching it for a while and they realized it wasn't a meteor. It was an old rocket booster.
Yes, I heard about this.
Yeah.
It was an old Saturn rocket, right?
Yeah. It might have been Mercury, Saturn. Yeah, one of the early ones.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was looking at it, and then this just popped up. I read this news story literally today.
About the shortage of rockets?
No.
Oh, you go with that one. I gotta look up what they're called, but go ahead.
Okay. So in Maui, so in you know, Hawaii, there was this fireball, or the trail of fireball, like these bright lights that came through the atmosphere that people got on video, and they were like, what's happening? And here it was one of these rocket boosters. It wasn't the same one. It was a rocket booster from a Venezuelan telecommunication satellite that was launched in China. There's a lot there, like 10 years ago, and it was re-entering the atmosphere.
Mm.
And so it's, you know, we do a pretty good job of mapping space junk or space debris, as it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But it sort of shows that, like, that this meteor, what we thought was a meteor, turned out to be, you know, this Saturn rocket.
We put it there. Whoops.
Kind of hanging out. We have a lot of stuff that's up there.
It's fine. All I can think of right now is
Sanford and Son.
No, you said what's happening.
Oh, what's happening? Look how our TV references are really taking me back to like being sick from school.
Well, so I'm not going to go into the details of this story, but it was just the headline that I saw. There is a shortage of NASA's SLS. Or I guess it's not NASA. I guess it. Whoever they have subbing out to make these rockets, but the SLS mega rocket, there's a shortage of them. And then now there's a tug of war between the different NASA programs, you know, who gets a rocket for what, you know, are we going to take this to the moon? Are we going to take this to the Mars? And so that's cooking right now on NASA side of things.
Is that just a budgetary constraint thing, or is there
they just don't, I mean, I didn't really read into it too much, but they just didn't have, they just don't have the rockets. It's not made like.
Let's go in the rocket building industry. Can't be harder than the podcasting industry.
There's something. Okay, we're really going off topic now.
I'll fire up my forge.
Yes. What more do we need, really?
So there's this question about like NASA's developing these rocket engines for like the future moon mission and the Mars missions and stuff like that. And then there's always the question, well, why don't you just, we got to the moon with the Apollo missions. Why don't we just go use what we got for the Apollo missions? Well, the Apollo missions, everything was all kind of like custom made, and just, it was actually, it's amazing that we got to the moon with what was going on with the time constraints and whatever with that were associated with the Apollo missions. But they basically lost the record on how they made those rockets for the Apollo missions. So that's why they're doing all this development again. They're basically trying to, you know, for lack of better, reinvent the wheel. Exactly.
Yeah. So, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, the timing, how quickly they put that mission together.
I read a book about it. I forgot the name of the book. It's all about the entire Apollo missions, really? All of them. And when they were putting those engines together, it was just controlled chaos. Like these things would flame out and they didn't know why. And it was just statistically got to a point where they're like, statistically, this probably won't flame out, but.
Yeah. One of the first, I don't know if it was Apollo 7. One of the first ones where they put men on it to shoot up, like it was shuddering so bad. The main engineer was like, yeah, no, this is going to fall apart.
Ouch.
Worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was there something, there's a statistic that the average age of the engineer working on the Apollo mission was like
26,
25. Yeah. It was something like that in the 20s. It was like these really young kids like putting this stuff together. And
like if you, in just using modern movies, like Apollo, if you watch Apollo 13, modern, from 25 years ago with Tom Hanks, you know, the movie.
Yeah.
But they show all the guys in the control room, and you know, the guys in mission control who, what's his face?
Al Harris?
Ed Harris. Yeah.
I'm trying to think
of his real name. When he's
the guy with the white vest,
go or no go. And they go through and it's like the head of all of the different departments, their average age, the head of like the departments was like 27.
Wow.
But they were saying like they ramped up so quickly that when they were trying to hire people, they didn't interview anyone.
Yeah.
They looked at your resume and they said, if it was good enough, they said you're hired, basically where you went to school, like what you studied. It actually didn't even matter where you went to school. If you studied like physics and math, they're like, you're hired. And they after like 3 months of working there, people either left or they were all in. Mm-hmm.
That's so awesome. Chaos. Just think, we could have been geologists on those missions.
We just missed it by, I don't know, solid 40 years?
I missed it by like a decade.
We end up. All right. Did we talk about, okay, so do you want to really fast mention the new find from like yesterday or 2 days ago?
Yeah, we can touch on it. Yeah. We should mention we talked about OSIRIS-REx. It's running into some problems right now.
Stuck. You see that? Too much of a good thing.
Too much of a good thing. Sucked up too much rock.
In the case really?
Before. Yeah.
Yeah, it's jammed. It's
leaking rocks back into space.
Or is it like the thing that holds it is jammed up? Or is
yeah,
it? It's,
yeah, yeah, it got just too much. It went deeper than they thought it would.
Too much of a good thing. Once again.
Too much of a good thing.
Exactly. Wow, that stinks. That really stinks. I mean, do they think it's going to yield any return, or
they're trying to stow it away, right? It has a process where it stows in the main thing. Mm-hmm. They're trying to stow it like emergency stow,
yeah, like wreck it stow.
Oh, overhead bin, get it up. No. There,
got it.
Yeah, so you talk about the big find.
Go ahead, Steve. Go.
No, you
go ahead.
They found water on the moon.
All right, story over.
All right, good times.
Let's save that one though, because I feel like we should.
The only reason I wanted to mention that is because we talked about it last week. We said that there was a big NASA find coming up.
They're also going to build a cell phone network on the moon. Nokia's got a contract to put in like a 4G. Network
only 4G. Come on,
yeah, they're going backwards.
Yeah, right.
Well, everyone knows 5G turns you into frogs.
Oh, that's true. I forgot.
I thought it gives you COVID.
Yeah.
Either way.
Well, let's save that because I do want to, we should circle back around and talk about Venus because.
Well, I have a question. If the Earth is flat, is the moon flat too?
Great question,
man. There is a document. I don't even know. I don't even want to bring it up. I don't even want to bring it up.
Did you say a document? Like
a document? I have a
top secret document.
I watched. No, there's
deposit box. Or?
There's. Like,
it just says the moon is flat.
I received a phone call last Chris's week.
Script handwriting.
There's a documentary about the flat earthers on Netflix.
I thought you mentioned that last week.
No, I just watched. I watched it last night, and I was just.
My he just jaw, mentions it every time he talks to us.
Nice. My jaw open dropped the whole time. It was
open your mind.
Nice. Anyways, no, but
God bless him.
Yeah. So I've seen a bunch of articles like that say like they found water on the moon. They found water on the moon, and then I saw another one that just said they found water on the moon. Again, this is not new. Which I thought was kind of funny. So
I think it's the scale that they think they found.
Yeah. Real quick. I have to.
Oh yeah.
Mention my note that I made today is the one and only the captain Kelly Blake's birthday. Good friend of the podcast. So happy birthday, Kelly Blake.
Happy birthday, Kelly.
Happy birthday, Kelly.
So by the time this comes out, your birthday will be over.
But
you know. It's the thought that counts.
I texted her. I said, happy birthday. She goes, I said, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. She goes, oh, that's great. I was actually, part of my birthday wish was to listen to more podcasts. And you just reminded me. I was like, great. So
there we go. We'll have to have her back on to talk about some more earthquakes.
Yeah. Some of those earthquake sprees or what do they call them?
Clusters.
Clusters. Thank you.
Swarms.
Swarms. Clusters. Lots of earthquakes.
There's a little one for a birthday out. 31 kilometers south of Bodie, California. 2.5. Probably didn't feel it.
Nah. Didn't feel that
one. Wah. All right. So let's get to the juicy part. Yeah. Seminac.
All right. The main topic. The man, the myth, the legend, the father of modern geology. Mr. James Hutton. You guys ever heard of this guy?
Yeah, the Scottish Hammer. Of course I have.
That was my nickname in high school.
not to be confused with King Edward I, who was the Hammer of Scots.
Ooh.
Which was bad.
No, that's not a good nickname.
Did you just make up the Scottish Hammer?
I did. I think
that's a really good nickname. I think
he should be called the Scottish Hammer.
I feel like next week on the WWE, there's going to be a new wrestler. Instead of Roddy Piper, it's going to be the Scottish Hammer.
It's amazing, actually.
He's a distinguished looking gentleman.
We should, I think that should be his, we should do a push to, that should be James Hutton's new official nickname.
Oh, I think we should take all historical geologists and give them nicknames. I'm in.
All right.
William Stratus Smith.
Well, he already had a nickname. We didn't give that to him.
Debtor's Prison. Something about Debtor's Prison. I don't know.
Yeah.
Pay your bills, man. Come on.
Was William Smith Scottish, too? What's with all these
jobs? He's English.
It was just a bunch of rich dudes in Great Britain who had nothing but time on their hands.
Yeah. William Smith was English.
Yeah. All right. So... James Hutton, this is my idea to have this topic.
I'm excited. I'm very excited.
Yeah, Jesse and I are just going to mute ourselves and listen.
Yeah.
No, you guys have to chime in. It's not just going to be me. It's not just going to be me just talking about James Hutton. I need you guys to chime in on this. All right. Nobody wants to hear me ramble on about this.
No.
By the way, David, I almost spit out my drink. I read that. It's not an animal alive can outrun a greased Scotsman.
a little willy for you.
Yeah.
All right. So James Hutton.
I tune in every week just to hear you ramble on.
Yes.
This is what I want.
It sounds like a personal problem. But anywho, we'll continue to move on. All right. James Hutton, I was reading about this guy, and he gets a lot of credit, but I just didn't realize. I knew that he was like one of the OG geologists, but you know, it just, it kind of like just dawned on me this week how important this guy was. You know, I mean, his nickname is like the, like I said, the father of modern geology. So, all right, James Hutton. He's born June 3rd, 1726, and he died March 26, 1797. All right. So he wore many hats, as we will talk about. You know, he kind of, he didn't really know what he wanted to do for his career, but anyway, so he was a Scottish geologist, he was a chemist, he was a naturalist, which, what exactly is a naturalist? Is that just someone that likes the outdoors, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They study the natural sciences.
Yeah.
They were like trying to understand the world before we had set sciences.
Set ologies, or.
Yeah. Or they just like the outside.
That's what I guess. I was like, maybe he just liked hiking.
I just assume he ran around. He ran around naked. Yeah.
Him and Ben Franklin. Was it Jesse has a story about Ben Franklin with the air baths, right?
Air baths. Yeah.
Wait, what is an air bath?
Oh, this is great.
Just stand on his balcony, naked. I feel like that's, he's really sort of pushing the logic there. People are like, you can't do that. He's like, air bath.
Nope, I'm in. I'm in. Tomorrow, nothing but air baths. Whether I need it or not.
All right, so.
Local Philadelphia man arrested for being naked.
good times.
All right, the things you learn on the Geology Flannelcast that you didn't think you'd learn about. Air baths. It's a thing. All right, so a little bit of background information about James Hutton. He's the son of a merchant and city office holder. James Hutton went to school at the University of Edinburgh. And proper way to pronounce it.
Yeah.
So he started off, like I kind of mentioned before, he didn't really, I don't know, he wore many hats. He tried out many careers. And so the first one, he decided to go into the legal profession, all right? But apparently he really wasn't feeling the legal profession too much, and it's said that he spent more time entertaining his fellow clerks doing chemistry experiments than actually copying legal documents. So it sounds like this guy's a real piece of work in the very beginning, you know? And so
sounds like me at work.
Hey, Bob, check this out.
I just imagine him, like, people are like trying to, because they didn't have Xerox machines. This is the 1700s, you know, they didn't have Xerox machines. They had their quill and their ink, you know, and their
you call me old Xerox machines. That's from the 80s, buddy. Come on.
I'm a product of the 80s, all right?
A ditto machine.
I don't know. What do you say? Yes. Copy machine? I guess you just say copy machine now, right?
Yeah. Scanner. Yeah, well, it's funny because there was worry that there was going to be, at some point, your copyright becomes so ubiquitous that you can no longer claim it as a copyright. So Xerox as a company was actually getting worried that everybody was calling them Xeroxes, that they actually pushed the term copy machine because they were afraid that if everybody said Xerox, then Xerox would no longer be copyrightable.
I wonder if that's like, because everyone says like, oh, and they want a soda, like I'll just have a Coke.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Coke has that same problem.
No, that's Velcro. A southern thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Velcro. It is. It's hook and loop.
Hook and loop.
Like Kleenex but Zipper. Zipper lost its copyrightability. Yeah.
I didn't know Zipper was a.
I didn't know that either.
YKK on your Zipper.
Oh, yeah. It's, 90% or 80% of all Zippers are made from the YKK factory in Japan.
That's in an Outkast song. YKK on your Zipper.
I like that.
Yeah. Anyway.
I had a story that I was going to tell about YKK zippers, but we'll save it for the after hours.
Our Patreons.
Patreon only, because it is a little. I'll write that down. If you want to hear the story.
Flannelcast after dark.
Flannelcast after dark, YKK zipper.
But again, you'll never know if it's dark out because none of us have Windows.
It's true. Timeless. This timeless podcast.
Overarching theme.
Can we get back to James Hutton, please? Nope. Come on.
When I label this file, I'm just going to label it Flannelcast without Windows. Not James Hutton.
All right. So this is James Hutton. So this sounds like a real goofball. He's doing all these chemistry experiments. I just imagine him blowing stuff up in the corner as people are trying to copy these legal documents. Like, come on, Jimmy. Come on. What are you doing, man? Come on. Chill out. So he had this buddy, he had this friend named James Davey. This is going to come back into play in a little bit. But they both really liked chemistry, right? And they were both interested in manufacturing sal ammoniac from coal soot. You guys ever heard of sal ammoniac before?
Yeah, I use it every day.
Yeah, he's my body shop guy.
That's the soap I use in my air baths.
So sal ammoniac is ammonium chloride, all right? So it's got a lot of uses, but they were making it, like I said, they're making it from coal soot.
That's incredible. That must have been a heck of a process.
So they like came up with this like really efficient way to make sal ammoniac, or this, like I said, ammonium chloride.
Yeah, let's call it ammonium chloride. Sal.
I like sal ammoniac. I think it
just reminds me of a dude from South Philly.
Hey, it's Sal.
Hey, it's Sal. Sal ammoniac. Yeah. All right.
Why is sal ammoniac so important?
Because he fixes cars in South Philly.
Hey, the guy just wonders on a transmission. All right.
Like one of those low budget commercials you see in like the third quarter of an Eagles game.
Yes.
Sal's back.
Yeah.
All right. So sal ammoniac is used in it's a nitrogen supply in fertilizers, an electrolyte in dry cells. A constituent of galvanizing tin or galvanizing tinning and soldering fluxes. It removes oxide coatings from metals to improve the adhesion of solders. What else? It's using cold medicines and cough remedies because it's an expectorant. Gets that.
Yeah.
Look out.
Clears you out.
What won't this do? We should get into this business.
It's used in veterinary medicine. It prevents urinary stones in goats, cattle, and sheep.
I wish I would have known that earlier.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he was using the sal ammoniac for. All right. That will go left to the, I don't know.
Well, wasn't he like a gentleman farmer too?
He was a farmer. He wasn't a gentleman farmer. He was like full scale farmer, man. So, I mean, maybe he was preventing his urinary stones in his goat, cattle, and sheep.
Yeah. That could be. Farming that led him to become very fond of studying the earth.
Yeah, wow, we'll get to that. Jesse's got a bunch of goats working the bellows at his forge behind the camera.
It is a goat-driven forge.
So I don't think that he was using this thing to make batteries. So my guess is that when he was farming, he was using if he had livestock or the fertilizer stuff.
The other myriad of things he was doing. Who knows?
You think he's making like backyard cold medicines?
Well, Hutton was in the 1700s, which is right around the time of Volta and, you know, some of these other people. So who knows? They're all scientists.
And there's many more uses for sal ammoniac.
Where do they find the time for this?
In the 1700s do you figure out like how to make sal ammoniac? So that's,
I think they're just bored dudes. Like, this guy had a job as a lawyer and he was blowing stuff up in his office. So
he wasn't a lawyer. No, he was an apprentice.
He never made it.
Read the notes. Read the outline, Peterson.
I'm sorry. I wish I could. The PDF is still trying to translate your chicken scratch.
We'll post these notes to the Patreon too.
No. We don't have to do that. But
it's some sort of Seminac shorthand. I kid, because my handwriting is terrible. But it's you could tell Seminac at some point in his life went to at least Catholic school, because it's a mix of print and cursive. But it's a good mix.
It's a hybrid. Best of both worlds. All right. So like,
gig is all in print, but that is all in cursive.
Really?
So you can tell that, you know, there's certain short words that just come off his hand in cursive. Hmm. I'm pretty sure there's, you know, those, what's the science of studying handwriting? I forget what it's called, but
oh, you know, what is
I'm sure called? Somebody could do, you know, years of therapy on you just based on these notes.
graphology.
No, I thought it was something else, but sure, graphology. I thought it was something
fancier.
Yeah, sorry. No, maybe it is graphology.
Maybe we should do a contest, and the winner gets my signed copy of the notes for this episode.
I like this. Jesse, tell Barry we need a Twitter poll.
Yeah, Twitter poll.
All right. Come on, we got lots to cover here, man. This is just the fun background info about
David said if we all switch to using cursive and stick shift cars, we could cripple an entire generation, and that is very very true. So real quick. So my wife does title insurance, and when you go to buy a house, like, you have to sign your name, and like I was talking about this a little bit earlier, a lot of banks won't let you just print your name or, you know, scribble a name. You actually have to sign your name in cursive, and she is running into people who don't know how to sign their name in cursive. They just print their name, and banks are rejecting it because that is not a signature, that is just a printed name. So
learn cursive if you want to buy a house.
There you go. Yeah, learn cursive. Stick shift cars, I think that's just a good skill to have.
Yeah I can
get by. You guys can drive stick?
Yes.
Yeah, I can get by. It might take me a couple minutes to remember it, but I had a buddy. We went on a road trip. Here we go. From Denver to Boise, and he had this old T100 truck. And he goes, Chris, you know how to drive stick? And I said, not really. He goes, well, you're going to learn. We got 12 hours on the road, man. And we're driving in Idaho, and I went to downshift to engine brake, where you're going this really big hill. And I accidentally popped it into reverse, going 50, 60 miles an hour. And all he heard was, he wakes up, goes, you know, he had some choice words for me.
I'm sure.
Popped into neutral. And he's like, is it still working? I'm like, yeah, it's still working. He goes, all right, I guess we're fine. So,
did you tell him to go see Salamoniac? No.
Sal, take care of it.
So, actually, he might be listening. Thomas, if you're listening, that was a fun road trip to Boise, man.
Yeah. If my brother is listening to this, he had a stick shift Jeep that I took when he went to college, and you could start that thing in second gear. It was great, but he always blamed me for burning out the clutch, and I would say that was not my fault.
So,
lemon.
And we do know that Ratley does listen every
as I say, I would start from third gear, second gear, third gear, and just drop the Scottish hammer.
So back to the Scottish hammer, Jimmy Hutton himself. So he's setting off all these chemistry experiments in the law office, whatever. He doesn't even make it a year. All right. So they politely release him from his apprenticeship, and he decides, that's cool. I don't need you guys. I'm going into medicine. Right. So he got his MD just like that, you know, it's like, a lawyer didn't work. I'll go into medicine. Yeah. Get at me. Right. So he got his MD at the University of Leiden in Holland in 1749. And he picked medicine because he was fond of chemistry, and he figured that there might be a good kind of segue into medicine, having a chemistry background, right? So he's doing medicine, and then he's like, you know what? Just not really feeling this. This is just, I want to get back into chemistry. So his buddy, James Davy, the guy that he's making Salammoniac with, they kept on making this stuff, and they apparently got really, really good at making Sal Ammoniac. So in 1765, Hutton goes back to Berwickshire, Scotland, and he decides to take up farming. So he's farming, and then also he's making Sal Ammoniac as well. So he's making some pretty good money from the farm and the Sal Ammoniac business. And then in 1768, he decides, you know, I'm going to give up farming and I'm going to pursue scientific interest in Edinburgh. All right. So, but it was kind of this farming gig that started Hutton's interest in geology. Now there's a lot of stuff that he started to figure out some of the basics of geology independently. Some of these basics of geology had already been figured out, but he started actually figuring out on his own without even knowing that other people had kind of found out discovered some of like the foundations of geology. So that was kind of what started this obsession. He started really obsessing over how land interacts with Earth's destructive forces, aka erosion. And this is going to come in really important when he really starts kind of cracking the code on how erosion works and how we can see that in the rock record. All right,
Agents of Erosion.
It's actually a pretty good band name.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Yeah.
So he started studying this new science they called geology. Did I pronounce that right?
I think it's geology.
Geology.
Started traveling all over the place and observing natural processes. So
Hutton, sounds like he was just, hanging out with his buddies, sitting on the deck.
Sounds like he's just
observing natural processes.
Yeah, people go to Europe and they backpack across Europe to discover themselves,
Exactly.
He's being a naturalist, discover. Okay, anyways. So
taking lots of air baths.
Living the life, He used this big wig in the Salmoniac business, So here's where we're going to get into the actual information about Hutton, our good, close personal friend of the podcast, James Hutton. He comes up with this concept called uniformitarianism. All right.
Cool.
Yeah. And so this is like,
that's a good word.
Dropping the Scottish hammer right now with uniformitarianism. Right. So uniformitarianism means that there's these fundamental processes that are occurring on Earth that are, they're altering the rock. You're getting erosion wearing down rock, and we're getting transportation of sediments, depths, all this stuff. All these processes that are affecting rock formation have always happened on Earth. All right. It's always happened throughout Earth's history. Right. So basically one way that you can kind of sum up uniformitarianism is the past is the key to the present is the key to the past. Vice versa. It's a very long winded explanation. I probably should have just said that in the beginning. And I could have saved two minutes right there.
It's the slow everyday things, the everyday processes that happen at the Earth's surface have always happened that way. So the rain falls the same way. The wind blows the same way.
So I figured this would be a good segue to talk about some of the, talk about some of the exceptions to this rule.
Yeah, well, if you want to learn more about uniformitarianism, you could check out
episode. Did a whole episode, right?
39, episode 39.
Yeah. Oh, that was like kind of recent.
No. I think that was our last episode before our issue where we stopped hitting record. And
so we had the great geology flannel cast unconformity.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Where we forgot to record that data and nothing happened for a little while. So, but episode 39, if you look under our old past podcast, uniformitarianism. Carry on.
All right. So uniformitarianism. And basically all the processes that are affecting rock and whatever are there on Earth processes are happening today. Always happened with a couple fun exceptions, but pretty much it's been pretty uniform all throughout. Right. So he comes up with this concept and then he submits these papers to the newly developed Royal Society of Edinburgh. And so this is a mouthful. The paper that he submits to the Royal Society, it is, ready for this? It starts off, the theory of the Earth, semicolon, or an investigation of the laws observable in the composition, dissolution, and restoration of land upon the globe.
We'll start every paper that way.
That sounds awesome.
It's, yeah. I don't know.
I'm not going to lie. I'd sit and listen to that talk.
Would you really?
Yes.
Like how, like, really? I don't know. It's a bit wordy for me. Just, why couldn't he just stop at the theory of first of all, the theory of the Earth. That's a pretty baller paper title right there. Just,
yeah.
That's hey, what I'm this saying. Is the Earth, and here's my theory. All right.
What would you prefer? Just stuff happens. come at me, brah.
So, yeah. So, so in this first paper, so this is kind of the start. He eventually ended up writing a book that we'll get to a little later. But this is kind of the start of when he started publishing his findings. And one of the places that he developed this quote theory of the Earth was at this location called Sicker Point. And Sicker, I see Jesse like shaking his head right now. He's just going to pour one out for the homies right now.
Yeah, I love Sicker Point. I always tell the story, I'm like, he's probably just sitting there like eating a sandwich, having some lunch, thinking about it.
So Sicker Point.
That's how I picture it. Why don't validate that, please? That's how I picture. Although sandwiches weren't invented at this point. Sorry.
When did sandwiches get invented?
Oh, the I Earl like of Sandwich know. Wasn't yet?
It was late, I want to say late 1700s.
Well, this is right around then because yeah, Hutton died in 1797.
Oh, yeah, it was so probably then.
This might have been the height of fashion.
Oh, man, he could have been having like a prototype sandwich, you know?
1762.
62, the sandwich was invented.
Yeah.
Well.
The Earl of Sandwich.
He literally could be eating a sandwich, having lunch.
That's, yeah, because he started farming in 65. So
yeah, taking a break, having a sandwich.
Okay, when there's, yeah, there's newly invented sandwiches.
Let me have one of these newfangled.
They're called hoagies.
Oh, man. So, excuse me. This is a fun one. So, all right. So this is where Hutton introduces Sicker Point, right? And so if you don't know what Sicker Point is, it's like, oh, man, it's like one of the most important outcrops in geology. It's got this beautiful angular unconformity. So I don't – so what an unconformity is – and well, I should first explain what an unconformity is. So two things can cause an unconformity. Either you have rock, a bunch of rock that's been deposited, whatever, it's formed, it's done this whole thing. Erosion comes in and takes it down to a certain point, erases a portion of it, and then you have new sediment deposition on top of it, and then it turns into new rock. So basically you have there's a gap of time missing in there. It would kind of be the equivalent of if you had like an American history textbook, it goes through the beginning days, the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, and then all of a sudden you turn the page and everything from the War of it just jumps right from the War of 1812 to the Vietnam War. And there's just a bunch of information missing in the middle. So that's kind of.
Or you have a very successful podcast and then your last podcast is in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden your next one is in 2020.
It's a lot of stuff that happened.
Something like that.
Who would do something like that?
I heard this.
The great disappearance.
thanks, Frank. Frank, one of our Patreons, Frank, called it the Great Disappearance. That's brilliant, Frank.
That is. That's what we're going to refer to it from now on as the Great Disappearance. Not we forgot to hit record. We're just going to call it the Great Disappearance.
So the other way you can get an unconformity is not necessarily from erosion, but just lack of deposition. Sediments not being deposited for like millions of years. So anyways, but so he sees this and I feel like I should find a picture of Sicker Point and post that on the website because it's.
I think we definitely will.
All right.
And by we, I mean Chris.
Thank you. I'd be honored to do this
make,
work for
make
you.
Make a note of that, buddy.
Yeah. It's on the dry erase board. Sicker Point picture. Cool. All right. I feel like, you know what we could do for the YouTube people that are watching? We could probably throw a picture of it up right now.
We could.
Does anyone want to jump on that while I'm going through this? It. All right.
Are you doing it, Steve?
No, you do it. You're always so, you're so much faster than I am. I'm like tinka 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 tinka.
All right. So, anyways, while Jesse's pulling up this picture, so if you want to see this, if you're just listening to the podcast, check out the YouTube. We can.
I'm going to scroll through. There's some beautiful ones here.
Oh. Share the screen, buddy. I'm excited.
All right, here we go. Jesse's sharing the screen.
Layers on top are flat. The layers on the bottom are angular. It's pretty. It's a good place to have a sandwich.
It does look like a good place to have a sandwich.
It is. It's funny, as far as angular unconformities, there are better ones. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a good one, but
this is the classic site where you
have that's
that scene. Dude's eating a sandwich.
All of them.
Jesse just searched Sicker Point sandwich.
Because he's there, like, he's sitting on this angular unconformity. He's watching the waves roll in. Yeah. He sees the waves, like, take a few grains of sand in, deposit them, take a few grains of sand out, erode them. And he's like, hey, this is all happening really slow.
Go down. That one right there. Yeah, that's the one. That's the money shot.
I do like the high viz in the other one with the hard hats. That was nice. Yeah. So I like when safety is concerned.
For those that are just listening, this unconformity on the bottom, the rock is all vertical, and then you can see on the top it's oriented like horizontally. So there's like six. I think there's like six steps that had to have happened to form this outcrop. I believe when you break it all down,
tilting, erosion, deposition.
Yeah.
Well, I guess deposition,
tilt, and then rotation,
lithification, rotation, erosion. Yeah,
everybody's moving their hands right now, and the people listening to the podcast can't see anything.
We all look like we're in a Tiffany video.
Tiffany, what?
Come on! It's another '80s reference. Our older listeners will get it; they'll think it's funny.
So here's a fact, and this is kind of embarrassing. I didn't know this, but I mean, it's not embarrassing. I just didn't know it. That's known as the Hutton unconformity. I never knew that they had actually named that unconformity the Hutton unconformity right there at Sicker Point.
Who knew?
So,
meanwhile, Hutton's like, I did.
How dare you?
Yeah.
So by the late, so here we go. Let's just kind of give you a background of where the science is at this time period by the late 18th century. All right. How can I phrase this? I guess, I just straight up say a lot of people believe that the Earth was only 6,000 years old at the late 18th century. Right. And specifically.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
There are people that believe that the Earth is only 6,000 years old.
And this came about from, according to Archbishop James Usher.
Usher?
Oh, there's two S's. Okay. Yeah. Usher.
Yeah. This guy could not dance, unlike the current Usher, who has got moves like. He is a gift from heaven.
So, his legs are disconnected from the rest of his body.
Seriously, that man can dance. Carry on.
So the Archbishop James Usher had going through the Bible came up with this date that the Earth started on October 22nd, 4004 BC. And I think I'm pretty sure.
Oh wow, the Earth is exactly almost 6,000 years old. Today.
Yeah, a week ago, 6,024 years old.
Oh, it's October. What's today's date? Today's 28th. Oh, I just missed it. Yeah. And well, I think
whenever you're listening to this.
Yes.
I think they believe that when they came up with that date, there was like 1,000 years left in the Earth. Like there was, I don't know, there's something like that too that I thought I read, but I'll just leave it at that. I don't have that exact number.
As we're podcasting from our bunkers in the future, but carry on. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So, moving at a snail's pace today. So by this time though, geologists started, they started figuring out things like fossils, stratigraphy, and just general geology information. And so, but Hutton's big thing was that he thought the Earth was way older than 6,000 years old. He's looking at the Great Hutton Unconformity, and he's like, listen, this thing did not form in 6,000. There's no way that this thing formed in 6,000 years. This is like,
you're seeing the waves roll in and take one or two grains at a time.
Yeah.
That would take a long time.
So, as he's eating his sandwich. Maybe he had dropped a few crumbs and he watched it kind of fall down into the ocean, just slowly moving away. Like this is going to take a long, long time. All right. So also, there's all around this time period, there's also this group called the Neptunists. All right.
What?
Yes. Not like what's that? That original
Aquaman. Group
that, what was that group that Pharrell was in? Weren't they called the Neptunes back in the day?
The Neptunes.
Yeah.
The St. Loonies and Neptunes or something?
Wasn't he in NERD too?
He wasn't.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. So the Neptunist, man, I just, you know, I guess, you know, hindsight's 2020. You know, we know so much today because we stand on the shoulders of giants, but I don't know how much you guys know about the Neptunists, but they...
I know nothing. Please enlighten me.
These guys... Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. These guys really, really grind my gears. All right. This is...
Now I'm excited.
This is... Oh, God. Because it's just like... It's just so... But then again, it's so obvious now because we know so much about geology, you know? The Neptunists... Wait, what's that?
Were they dummies? Big dummies?
I don't know, but... they believed that all of the rocks originally precipitated out of water from the Great Flood. Okay. So my answer to that is all you have to do is watch a volcano erupt, watch lava flow out of it, and you can see the rocks forming in real time. I mean, like, these guys are in England. You know, there's active volcanoes in Italy. You didn't have to go very far.
The problem is all those Neptunists – they died in Vesuvius in 79 AD.
I don't think all of them. Actually, no. Neptunism was a very, very well-respected view of geology back in the day.
Yes, but back in the day, the you know, Mecca of the planet, the science of the world was coming from England, where there were no volcanoes. You know, those people may not have ever left their island. They didn't see any parts of the world, and anything that came to them that sounded different, they just dismissed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's so. But I feel
is that so hard to believe even in this day and age?
No, you're right.
So
the Neptunists were run. The guy that the main guy with associated with the Neptunists was Abraham Gottlob Werner.
David just said, yeah, we're talking about pre-sandwich people here. So, yes.
All right, I'll give him that, all right? But Hutton now, okay, so he had this view of uniformitarianism that he presented, right? And he started just looking at just the general sedimentary processes that are, you know, that, I mean, Hutton is just, this guy is just batting 1,000. He's just knocking them out of the park left and right, right? He's like, it's like the equivalent of like Mark McGwire in like, was it like 1997 or so when he was just all roided up and just, you know, popping them out of the park left and right. Like,
I mean, let's face it. He was a lawyer. Then he was a doctor. And then he realized neither one of those fields were good. So then he became a geologist. That's pretty much how you do it. So
Hutton's pushing that all these rocks are actually forming from just general sedimentary processes that we're seeing today. You know, rocks getting eroded down, being transported, deposition, compaction, cementation, lithification, all this stuff. It's not coming out of the water, right? And like I said, all you have to do is just watch a volcanic eruption, and you can clearly see that a lava flow coming from a volcano is making rocks. All right.
What about evaporites?
Well, yeah. You had to go there. Like, yeah.
Well, you know, we're going to get an email. What about evaporites? Anyway, so there can be rocks that actually come out of the water, but carry on.
All right. So Hutton dies and we'll get back to, I guess I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but in the year
18, he's dead.
He's dead. He's not alive anymore. So, but
rest his soul.
So in the early 1800s, the Neptunists outnumbered the Huttonians, that's how you pronounce it, by like 10 to 1.
And say Huttonites.
The Huttonites? Huttonians.
Huttonian.
I can't read my own handwriting. So the Neptunists outnumbered the Huttonians like 10-1 in 1800. So these Neptunists were just like, and the Huttonians actually became later known as the Plutonists or Plutonism, that rocks actually originate from heat. The internal
now,
heat.
Now, does it, where does your Lord Kelvin come into this
play? Oh, that's post. Jesse. Well, that's after Hutton dies.
Jesse hates Lord Kelvin.
But oh, yeah, we'll get Jesse all riled up about that. Yeah. All right, so Hutton's really pushing. He goes, listen, these rocks are originally forming from pressure and heat. They're not coming out of the water. And what's interesting enough, he had a hypothesis on how mountains formed. He thought that mountains formed from internal heat that caused the crust of the earth to warm and expand. And so I just thought that was interesting. So they were throwing out some, taking this, like he's like really, it's almost like he's developing a theory of the earth.
That's pretty big picture stuff. Well,
yeah.
Hence the title of his paper.
Right? The theory of the earth. Well, he was also a chemist. So he's probably like, heat it up, it expands. He wasn't right, but I like that. I like A for effort.
At least his physics was correct.
Yeah. A for effort for that one. I don't even know if like you could expand rock to form like mountains, like the Himalayan mountains.
Sure you could.
To have it come up that high?
Nah, probably can't.
I like that. A for effort with him. That was like the first strike that he had while he's up at plate. All right. He thought that like basically you had like this internal heat that was originally like forming rocks. And what he was hinting at was igneous rocks, the formation of igneous rocks. And then it wasn't until a little bit later after that that we basically discovered like metamorphic rocks, stuff being bent out of basically pre-existing rock that is comes under these tremendous heat or tremendous pressures, and you heat it up a bit and you get new minerals crystallizing out. But anyways, moving on. So essentially Hutton starts to pick up on the rock cycle. And so even like something as fundamental as we have today, Hutton was like one of the first people to kind of pick up on that, which I found like really fascinating. Like, man, this dude is just like really knocking him out of the park. All right. So let's get to the end of Hutton's life, right? He wrote a book and he had two volumes published in 1795. All right. Once again, his Theory of the Earth book published from those papers. He published the book into two volumes. He had a third volume written at the time of his death, but it was only partly finished. He didn't get around to finishing that, the third volume of this book. Right.
And in the end,
yes. So
got me.
Here's Hutton's downfall. All right. Everyone's got a flaw, right?
Oh no.
Yeah. Here's Hutton's downfall. He was a crappy writer, unfortunately. Really, really, really bad at writing. And if you want your ideas to come across to be pushed out for people to accept them, you have to be able to communicate, right? And unfortunately, he was just not good at portraying his thoughts via the writing process, right?
I mean, look at the title of his one book. It was grand, but it was wordy.
I got another book. I got another book just as wordy coming up that people enjoyed and really, really liked.
Ooh.
All right. So Hutton's book was a hard read. All right. It wasn't exactly an easy one. All right. But Hutton was homies with this guy named John Playfair. Now, John Playfair was a mathematics professor. He took him out to Sacred Point.
Nothing says writing like mathematics.
It's a very good point. So Hutton's buddies with John Playfair, right? And Hutton took Playfair out to Sicker Point, and he's like, yo, dude, look at this thing. This
here's
is
a
crazy,
sandwich.
Right? Yeah. Look at Sicker Point. Look at this unconformity. Maybe one day they'll name it after me. I don't know. This is bananas, right? And so John Playfair is a big fan of Hutton, right? and Hutton dies, and people are just kind of like, I don't know about this book, just because it's so hard to read, and it was just, it just couldn't get his concept across. Playfair comes out, and I like this quote. I have a quote here from John Playfair. He says, "I must own that on reading Dr. Hutton's first geological publication, I was induced to reject his system entirely, and should probably have continued still to do so with the great majority of the world. But for my habits of intimacy with the author," basically, he's my homie, and I spend a lot of time with him, "the vacity and perspicuity," did I pronounce that right?
I don't know, but he's not winning.
Either way, he's not winning.
Anyway, perspicuity of whose conversation formed a striking contrast to the obscurity of his writing. Okay, so basically, I botched that quote, reading that quote, but he's saying, if it wasn't for me hanging out with him, I would have rejected this book too. This thing is, yes, he didn't do a good job of writing this, but luckily I spent time with him, and you know, I know this guy and I know what he's trying to say. All right.
But that's so, such an unfortunate portion of science. How much science was lost for decades, or is still lost, because they were unable to communicate to the public.
It's important to be able to be a good writer, especially in this day and age. You know, gotta be good at writing. So Hutton was kind of, it almost seems like after reading all this information about Hutton, he was kind of like before his time. Is that how you, what's that phrase?
Ahead of his time.
Ahead of his time. Thank you. Ahead of his time. Thank you. Yeah. So he had the ideas out there, but he just needed, like, you know, a little bit of a push. I always think of like the lead singer from Sublime, right? He dies, and then the whole thing blows up. That whole band blows up, right? I guess they were pretty big. They were pretty big before he died, actually. So maybe I'll rescind that comparison.
Yeah.
So, all right. But the times, they're a-changing. All right. So, like, for example, so Hutton did his thing, and, you know, he was going up against, a lot of people were saying that the Earth was 6,000 years old. He's like, I think this thing's a lot older, right? So, you know, let's just, for fun, fast forward this 100 years later to 1899, Lord Kelvin, Jesse's favorite scientist ever. He is frowning right now.
Yar.
Don't care for him.
Lord Kelvin calculated in 1899 that the Earth was 25 million years old. And no one even questioned that. They're like, oh, yeah, okay, 25 million years old. Cool. All right, you know, he's off by still a lot, but.
No, he did a lot of math and calculated some things.
He earned the right to be accepted. Like, the people just, he had done a lot for people to just not question it with thermodynamics and whatnot. He was wrong. So,
but not only, so he was such a well-known and respected individual that it went a long, long, long time before anybody questioned it, which is a detriment to science. You should feel free to have people question your science right away and not get so uppity about it. You know, if you really did good science, did your science well, then let people challenge it, because it should stand the test of time.
Yes. Very well put, Steve.
Thank you.
Very well. Good job. I like that.
But nobody questioned any of my science. Thanks.
No.
So but like that was 100 years later. But in 1795, everyone is still, you know, thinking that the Earth is 6,000 years old, and you know, there was a great flood, Noah's flood, and stuff like that. So back to John Playfair. He is going to save James Hutton's butt big time. And James Hutton owes a lot to John Playfair. John Playfair in 1802 published Illustrations of the Huttonian Theory of the Earth.
Ooh.
So he's just like, all right, yeah, he did this, but this is really what it's supposed to
say. Nobody's going to read this. Let's look at these pictures.
Mulligan, you know. All right. So enter another OG geologist. So this the plot thickens, right, and to further accepting James Hutton's concept of uniformitarianism and all this really interesting stuff that he had to say. Charles Lyell. This guy is like, I mean, this is a big name in geology. If you're just kind of listen, you like to learn about geology for fun and you don't really know too much about the history of the field, Lyell is like,
he's the man.
He's
I think we talk about him a little bit in episode 9 when we talk about Stratus Smith. I think so. From what I remember from 2014. Mm-hmm. So
2014. If my 6-year-old memory serves me correctly.
Yes.
All right. So Charles Lyell, who was born the year that Hutton died, he was a big fan of Hutton's work. All right. And Lyell had this personal mission to, quote, free the science from Moses. Right. So he really wanted to, you know, no more of this 6,000-year-old stuff. Like, come on, we don't think the Earth is that young. It's much, much older than that. All right. So Lyell really liked Hutton's idea of deep time, and that's like a fundamental concept in geology. That's one of the hardest things when you're first learning geology is like comprehending deep time. We're dealing with numbers. You know, not only are we dealing with years and in the millions, hundreds of millions, but also billions. You know, the Earth is 4.6 billion years old. It's a really hard concept to figure out, especially for humans. If you're lucky, you live like 80 years, right? And so humans did not evolve to understand years on the scale of millions and billions.
Yeah, we talk about this in episode 28. I feel like I'm just...
Look at you. You were like...
spouting off these previous episodes. I think our downloads are going to go way up this week. Anyway, episode 28, geology timescale.
So, all right. So Lyell really likes Hutton's concepts of deep time and uniformitarianism. And he publishes, you ready for this? If you think Hutton had a good book name, here's Lyell's book name. All right.
I am excited.
All right. So it's not just The Theory of the Earth, right? That was his book, Theory of the Earth. Lyell's book is called Principles of Geology. So number one, that's a very, very ballsy thing to say, like just right there. Principles of Geology. Okay, so that was like the shortened title. Principles of Geology, being an attempt to explain the former changes of the Earth's surface by reference to cause now in operation. That's a wordy title.
Like, I fell asleep halfway through.
Yeah, I fell asleep reading it. But it's an excellent book. So Charles Lyell, not only was this guy a big anti-Neptunist, right? He's also an anti-catastrophist. So there was another, the catastrophists believe that the Earth changed, that basically they started to see all these mass extinctions, or I shouldn't say mass extinctions, let me rephrase that, how the fossil record would suddenly change. And they thought that there had to have been a giant catastrophe to have this like quick, sudden change in the fossil record. Then guys like Lyell was like, nah, what if it was an unconformity? What if it was just you had erosion erasing a lot of this fossil record away? It doesn't have to be catastrophes all the time. All right, guys. So anyways, that really pissed off Lyell. So he didn't like the catastrophists, and he didn't like the Neptunists. He had a bone to pick with each of these guys. All right. So I love this quote here as I was doing the research for this episode. We mentioned this book before, Annals of a Former World, written by John McPhee. He has a quote that said, Lyell out Huttoned Hutton. All right. So he's basically trying to take what Hutton said and just like take it like a step farther. Right. So Lyell published his book and, it's very well received. And then there was another geologist that started reading this book, and this is where we'll end things because I'm out of notes. But also, Charles Darwin took Lyell's book on the HMS Beagle. Mm. And And he reading that, and he was studying that book while he ended up turning the entire field of biology upside down on that.
Yeah, because he was a geologist.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't the original voyage to survey volcanoes of the Galapagos?
Yes.
Silence.
I just know he was the original Chuck D. That's all I know.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's like the lineage with the focus of James Hutton, but there's like the lineage of like the super OG geologist right there.
I do have one quote from James Hutton. The volcano was not created to scare superstitious minds and plunge them into fits of piety and devotion. It should be seen as the vent of a furnace.
I like that. The vent of a furnace.
Right?
Furnace. I mean, he's right. I can't argue with him. Man.
Yeah.
Not sure to argue.
Yeah. But Playfair also had a good quote. The mind seemed to grow giddy by looking so far into the abyss of time. Only a mathematician would say something like that.
That's after he's all hopped up on one of those new sandwiches. Look at that sick point, right?
So, right? Yeah.
Wait, you could put lettuce and tomato on this? Yeah. What?
I got to tell my buddy Sal about this.
next thing you know, man, you'll be putting onions on this and
mustard or mayo. Yeah.
Travel to the New World, opened a hoagie shop.
So there's the biography of James Hutton. You heard it first.
Actually, yeah, but
you didn't hear it first. It's been said many times before.
No, but Chuck Lyle, he's definitely getting an episode. I love it.
We should.
Yeah.
Kind of an important guy. Jesse and I are actually working on a project that's a continuation of his stuff.
Standing on the shoulder of giants here.
That's, you know.
I love it. Well, I'd like to take a time to thank our Patreons who are listening to us. Thank you very much. We have Frank, David, Maddie. Hello. Welcome. Thank you. To our ever-loving sponsor.
Formatting
formula. Sorry.
His internet was just going
No, I was like, what happened there? I wasn't sure if Chris was just sitting still or if my internet froze.
You made it so far.
And your camera shut off, so it was just your picture there for a second.
Nice. All right. Anyway, so the formatting formula, thank you very much for always being a sponsor. Our Patreons, and as always, please, we have a new social media accountant. I don't know. What do you call
manager?
That? Manager? Yeah. Unofficial, whether or not he knows it or not. So we're gonna start up in our Twitter game and our Instagram game.
The Instagram.
Yeah, because apparently that's what the kids are using these days.
If you have any social media issues, blame it on our buddy Barry, friend of the show. Social media manager.
Yeah, and I'm going to turn over all the Facebook stuff to Jesse's wife because I stink. So
she doesn't.
But check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Geologyflannelcast.com. You get all the episodes there. All the links that we talk or all the news stories that we talk about on the shows, we post those links there. So if you want to do some more research on your own, you can go check out those stories. Also, like I said on the last episode, we haven't been advertising our listener questions episode. So if you have a burning geology question and you'd like to play Stump the Geologist, we would love to answer that burning geology question. Yes. So go to the website. If you want to submit a geology question to us, the best way to do it, go to the website, click the link that says submit geology question. I think it says that simple.
Or listener question.
Yeah. Listener questions. That's something to do with the questions on there. There's like only the four links.
There's some sort of question mark.
I should get.
Anyway, but the fastest way to probably get your question answered would be to become a Patreon member, because Patreons at certain levels get to ask us basically to dance like puppets if they want to. So, you know, that would be the quickest way. But yes, we also accumulate listener questions and try to address listener questions. Because not all of our listeners are rich philanthropists who want to just throw money at us.
Although, if you are a rich philanthropist, throw money at us.
We're open to anything.
Yes. Yeah. Anything. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, so if you have a listener question, go to the website, click the link that says submit, submit a geology question. And
you were right. I apologize, Chris. I thought it said listener question, but carry on.
That's the same thing. We'd be more than, we're starting to get some more listener questions coming in. So that'll be awesome. Thanks to those people. I saw a couple people sent in listener questions this week. I saw those. We'll try to answer those pretty within a short amount of time on a future episode. So they're always
fun. We have learned to not give time frames on this podcast. Oh,
yeah. No, we've been doing good. We've been doing good.
We have been doing much better, but
after the great resurrection of the what did we call that? The hiatus. Oh
shoot! I gotta look in the chat.
The great disappearance.
The great disappearance. Yes.
The resurrection following the great disappearance. We've been much better.
The resurrection. No, I don't. Yeah, come up with a better term than resurrection. But yes, after the great disappearance, which rose
like a phoenix.
Happily covered the free t-shirts of 2017 issue. So
just run away from your problems.
Exactly. We did. We ran away for a few years. Now we're no legally obligated. So
it's literally the reason we went away.
Yeah. No, but we will start having more Twitter polls, posting more Instagram pictures. We'll have more opportunities to get some FlannelCast stickers. So we're really going to try to up our social media game. So please check us out.
Or just send us a message on the, you go to the website. You can contact us through the website. Just send us an email or a message. We'll get it that way. Or let us know. Say hi. We won't bite. Jesse might a little bit.
If I think you're a sandwich.
We do have past recordings on YouTube. Thank you, Frank.
Yes.
So let's check us out. Subscribe to us on YouTube. You know, apparently you can make money off of YouTube. I had no idea. So
not anymore.
Unless you're like, I don't know, some kind of influencer.
That's us. No?
That Bieber kid.
We're a rock pusher. No, that might have negative connotation, huh?
I don't know. Let's just quit while we're ahead. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Geology Flannelcast. We love you guys. And we'll see you guys next week with another action-packed episode. Jesse's going to recite every single mineral ever discovered in alphabetical order.
Ooh, next week. All 4,000 of them.
I'm on it.
All right. That's not going to happen. We love you guys and take care. Bye.
Bye.